Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining us tonight on Episode 6, Season 5 of The Standoff with Brandon Ritchie here on New Zealand Sport Radio. We're here live on Wednesdays on Facebook throughout the season. Evening, Ritchie. It was an Easter filled with upsets. Going by my tips, first of all, how was your long weekend and what did you think of the round?
Evening, Brad. The long weekend was good. I really enjoyed the round. Just as much as I enjoyed the chat we've just been having about the origins of how rugby league positions came up with their names. Brad and Paul just been blowing my mind. Did you retain any of it, Brad?
Yes. Don't test me, but I know. I will pass the information on to the person who asked and see if we get a pass mark. So I have to let Paul know next week. If the answer was satisfactory. But yeah, while we're here live on Wednesday evenings at 8 p.m., we can also catch our show at your convenience on iHeartRadio and Spotify. Just remember to search for New Zealand Sport Radio. As always, we're going to cover everything you need to know in the week that was rugby league, including our top stories of the week, a review of the round 4 matches. We'll then stop and answer some questions from you guys, as well as questions we're prepared for each other. We'll then preview round 5 and talk about who we pick. Before ending the night with a recap of the Super League. Paul's mentioned, and by the way, we're also on YouTube as well as Facebook. Yeah, so on YouTube as well under New Zealand Sport Radio, I believe, Paul.
You can jump in. You've been doing this for 5 years.
remember to send us comments and questions throughout the show, and we may as well jump straight into the top stories of the week, Richie.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, first one came not long after our show last week, but the NRL announced that the NRLW will expand to 12 teams next season, with the Warriors returning to the competition and the Bulldogs joining for the first time. Not really a surprise. We know the Warriors were kind of pushing hard to be brought back in after they had to depart due to COVID. And we know Gould is really working on trying to get the Bulldogs up to a successful level, and getting a women's team is going to help with that. I know the Rabbitohs did a press release and they said they're disappointed they didn't make the cut this time, but they're still pushing and they want to be included. And I know, I don't know how long it's going to be, but eventually they're going to get to a point where every NRL team will have an NRLW team, you would imagine. Not anytime soon, I don't think, due to trying to get enough talent. But what's your take on the Doggies and the Warriors returning?
Yeah, obviously chuffed, particularly for the Warriors. We were messaging with the Ruin Hammer boys about it as well in our group chat. Yep, time to start building a roster. And hopefully we transition in nicely and start challenging for titles in that comp.
And Paul?
Now, well, how about this? How about actually we get a second women's team before they actually get a second NRL team? Get a second WNRL team first.
Stick in New Zealand team?
Yeah, get a team in Christchurch before the men. Get a girls team down there.
No one cares about Christchurch, Paul.
Okay, Wellington. Correctly.
I think they're still going to stick with the teams that are there as well, just to try to help fan base wise, I guess. But first thing, we just got to make sure that Cameron George and that have got Millie's number and given her a call. Be a great marquee signing.
But also, it could be a way of how do you want to get into say Perth or the West Australia kind of sports market. But you don't want to add an extra team or men's team, that might be another way of doing it. Just wildly throwing out ideas there.
Potentially. They've given no indication of when more teams are coming in after these two. So that's probably conversations we can have later on. But yeah, very happy to see the Warriors back. It'll be interesting to see how many of the old Warriors girls they could get back. I know the contracts are a bit up in the air. And there's a few that have kind of settled in Australia and made lives with partners and stuff. So it might be a case of their brand new talent coming in. I know we spoke about it. It feels like years ago now, but it was last year sometime, or maybe the year before, that the Warriors, they brought in a former Kiwis captain to kind of oversee the women's side of the franchise, basically. So going back that far, looking at getting talent in and improving talent. So, yeah, hopefully there's a lot of things already underway for that, but very excited.
Well, I mean, we've also already we've had a few of the Black Fern Sevens players go across to play NRL. So, I mean, look, there's definitely talent available for the team. It's just about whether they want to play for the Warriors or whether they want to go overseas, because over to Australia. So I say there are two or three, or at least a couple of the Union girls have gone over to play.
I think Gail Broadson and Taylor Nathan Wong from the Sevens have gone over.
Wong's gone to the Raiders. Oh, is it St. George? I thought it was Raiders in my head for some reason, but no.
Well, this
probably is just Dragons.
She's playing Dragons. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, very excited for them, and hopefully we have a good roster that we can talk about to finally have a team back in the mix. But we'll move on. This is actually one that was kind of discussed in our group chat today, Richie, but there's rumors that the Titans are in discussions with Nathan Brown to come in and become an assistant coach for Dez. I thought the Titans were at an all-time low, but they're finding a new level.
That would be a new level. The man that told Chanel Harris-Tavita to not tackle too hard, apparently, if anybody caught that podcast. And we'll get to it in the round review. But yeah, they're hitting new lows. But that I don't see Nathan Brown as the savior. Do you?
No. I've never met the man, of course, but from everything I've seen, it looks like he's a great guy. But his coaching, he kind of hit the ground running back in the old days. He was doing okay, and then he kind of fell apart. And it just doesn't seem to really be what a team's looking for. I know he did irreparable damage to the Warriors, it seemed, until Webster kind of magically fixed a lot of things quicker than we all expected. But, that podcast you heard, you could probably put some of the blame on Brown for why Chanel disappeared for a year. I think he kind of sucked all the fun out of it for him. Didn't want him to tackle, but then also wanted him to be a fullback. I don't know. The Titans need help, but I just don't think he's the answer.
Yeah, no, me either.
Anything else you want to add on it before we move on?
No, we don't need to stick around on Nathan Brown too long.
Yeah, and I see Jacko's put a comment in saying Katoa left because of Brown. I hadn't heard that, but that doesn't surprise me. He was kind of very polarizing, I think, with the fans and the players, to be fair. And Simon said Nathan Brown might be a better assistant coach instead of a head coach.
Maybe. Look at Steve.
Potentially. Daniel, guys like that. Yeah. If he does get the gig and the Titans turn around, I'll sit here and eat humble pie, as I've done many times on this show. I just don't see it personally. But we'll move on. Once again, Richie, the NRL has come out and admitted the bunker got it wrong again and said they incorrectly ruled on another obstruction and that Joseph Manu should have been awarded his try against the Panthers. I know if you've been watching the nightly shows that they have, there was some one that they did, like the little beacon showing like the speed that Dylan Edwards is going and that he technically could have got to Joey Manu. We did talk about it a little bit last week about how that obstruction rule, and I think Ivan Cleary might have listened because he kind of stole my quote in an interview, but said, like, you can't have it black and white because it doesn't work. There has to be gray areas involved in situations like that one we saw. And how many weeks in a row can the NRL come out and say the bunker got it wrong before they look at a bit and look about tweaking it back? It's never going to be perfect, of course. But yeah, if everyone sitting at home is screaming at the TV about like what the bunker should be able to see and the bunker just doesn't see it, I don't know what you can do. I know that's kind of my question to you later, but
then again, yeah. you've got eight games over a weekend. Say the bunker's making 10 or so decisions a game out of 80%, 80 games, they're getting one wrong, and you're looking at like 1.5%. I mean, that's a lot, or 99.5%, 99% success rate. That's amazing in some ways.
They're not only getting one wrong, though. We're just talking about one.
Or that they're apologizing for anyway.
Yeah. I don't know. You got anything else you want to add to that, or are you going to save it for your answer later?
Oh, just that one was a shocker. And it's kind of like what I think I posed it to you in a question a couple of episodes ago about is the door open for players to be milking these penalties? And in this instance, Warrior Hargraves had gone through the line and there was tons of space either side of JWH for Dylan Edwards to manoeuvre to where the ball was heading without running bang smack into Jared. But he chose the path to run straight into him. That's what I believe. People are doing this on purpose. It's no mistake. And I think that's what the bunker needs to be looking at. Are these people milking it? Because I believe a lot of them are.
Milking's always going to be the hardest thing to judge because some of them are just so good at it. Some of them are so good that it looks believable and you're not sure if they actually did it or not. So you never want to get to a point where you're penalizing for milking in case you do get one wrong. Like, say, someone gets knocked out early, like Kurt Capewell, we didn't know that he had a concussion because the doctor didn't pick it up. But if he lies down in a tackle too long and you're like milking penalty and then you find out he's been knocked for six and he doesn't really know where he is, till later. But yeah, they got to do something because Dylan Edwards, I know mobility isn't his strongest suit, but surely he can step around a prop. You know, he is an extremely fast and nimble fullback. I don't know. And I saw there was a few comments. Mark and Jacko said that players Tommy Turbo and Damien Cook. Tommy Turbo said they'll do what they can to get an advantage, and Damien Cook admitted that players are milking penalties with obstructions. Yeah, and that's what happens when you have this black and white rule. If it's grey, you can go, okay, that guy was having it on, we're going to leave it. But black and white, you go, no, that's a penalty. And like Paul said, it's a professional rugby, so of course they're going to do everything to win within the rules or not get caught, 100%. And I stand by cheating to win when you have to, but...
it's just yeah. Like Storm did with that sort of paying players kind of in brown paper bags.
Yeah, that is called the rooster. But yeah, it's, I don't know. Until they do a drastic change, we're going to keep seeing it happen, unfortunately. But yeah, we're kind of eating all into my question. So I'm moving on. This one might be a bit saucy and interesting. But the NRL is rumoured to be monitoring fans' behaviour when it comes to booing Latrell Mitchell relentlessly at games. So in the game week just gone, he was kind of booed out of the stadium. And they're apparently concerned that the, 10,000-20,000 people in the stadium are booing at him because of the colour of his skin, as opposed to the fact that they generally just don't like one of the most unlikable players in the NRL. I want to point out that I was at a game in Auckland and there was a fullback playing against them in Kalen Ponga that was also booed out of the stadium. I think a lot of it to do with the fact that he won a Dally M last year that another player might have got.
Yeah.
But it's ridiculous. And it's we have talked about it. It felt like almost every bloody episode this year about the perceived special treatment the Latrell gets and the fact that they're apparently worried that he's going to retire early because of the booing and what. And if you're for booing or against booing, that's completely up to you. I believe I don't boo a lot of people. In fact, I booed one person in the weekend, and that was Adam Pompey. And that was it. But that's my choice as someone who pays the people next to me, as long as it's, you know, not got a racist connotation or anything like that, then I think it's fair play. And like Hammers said, fans booing opposition players has been a part of rugby league since day dot. Yeah, it kind of is what it is. But what do you think? From what I've seen in the reports, there was no one hurling racial abuse at him. It was just booing.
Yeah, different story if it's racially motivated, but why is this a thing? Latrell doesn't exactly endear himself to a lot of the fans. Show me once where Roger Tuivasa-Sheck's been booed, or someone like the Hammer, Tabuai Fadeau. So people like that, you know, people who are a bit more humble. He gets booed because of who he is and the way he portrays himself. I know it's not all bad. I know behind the scenes he does a lot of great community work, particularly within his, you know, the Aboriginal culture. But yeah, he gets himself offside a lot of the time as well.
And in that game, just going, it didn't help that he put a cheap shot on Josh Adokar that ruled him out of the game.
Yeah, it was terrible.
You know, that's not going to endear you to the fans watching if you put a cheap shot on one of the superstars of the other team and rule them out of the game. He didn't get cited for it, but he did get fined. They looked back on it and said, no, that was actually dirty, and fined him. But yeah, things like that. And I know a lot of people turned on him with the when he put that cheap shot on Joey Manu.
Yeah.
That was where a lot of people changed. There was still that minority that were dead set against him, but when he did that to supposedly his best friend, it turned a lot more of the fans that weren't involved with the clubs. And yeah, it is what it is. There are players that people just don't like. Matt Lodge was getting that for a bit. Every time he touched the ball, the stadium would erupt in boo. So yeah, we'll have to see what happens with this story. They seem to threaten it every couple of years, hoping that it will make people quiet their opinion, but I just don't see that happening anytime soon. But yeah, we'll move on before I say something bad. The Dragons, they have granted Zach Lomax his wish and agreed to release him from his contract at the end of the season. Poor old Ben Hunt must be shaking his head. How many times did that poor bugger ask to be released and get told no, and he's still stuck there? Lomax asked once and got it. And I've seen rumours, I couldn't confirm anything, but I've seen rumours that he's already he's already spoken to the Eels, potentially. So, yeah, what do you reckon about the Dragons letting him go? There was some story from Shane Flanagan earlier saying that he was playing tough guy, saying we're only going to let Zach Lomax go for something in return. We want to come out better for it. To then, like a day later, just saying, no, you can go. We don't want anything. Just leave. It doesn't seem right. And yet Hammer has commented and confirmed he was talking to the Eels today. And Jacko said Lomax is going to have to take a pay cut to move as well. Yeah, I think you're only going to see him on the money he's getting at the Dragons if he goes to a real struggling team. But yeah, what's your take on Lomax? Hell of a player. Yeah. It's a bit of a red flag for me that he's played a couple of games at wing and he's thrown his toys already.
Again, use the let's use Roger Tuivasa-Sheck as a, you know, as an example. He'll play wherever the coach puts him. You know, he's won a Dally M at fullback, asked by the coach to play centre, and he'll do what he'll play wherever is good for the team. And then you get other people that, you know, they just want to play where they want to play. And if that's not what they're getting, then it's time to ask for a release. So, but he is a hell of a player. And if he landed at the Eels, it's probably great for both parties because the Eels could really do with some quality out in their back, a bit more quality in their back five.
Yeah, no, Hammers.
I'd see that being a good fit.
Hammers given some more background for us, doing our job for us. But if Zach Lomax was to leave this season, Flanagan wanted a like-for-like player. But since they've granted him a release for next season and the Dragons pay some of his contract money. But, yeah, that the like-for-like is if he left now. But, yeah, he's basically walking away from a lot of money because he doesn't want to be a winger. And yeah, but we will go on to a related topic before we move on. The Dragons are interested in signing. Oh, yeah.
So to your question, Rob, saying the Stoking players, Stoking players being granted releases on your contracts. How about this? How about you're allowed to keep paying the contracts? Obviously, legally you have to, but you can remove them from your salary cap and hire someone else and just make them sit on the bench or in the reserves until their contract runs out to try and make players actually stand by the contracts they sign.
That'd be an interesting way. I'm all for, like, they're stuck in your salary cap, but if they don't want to be there, dropped into reserve grade, you're taking that hint financially, but so are they, because a lot of the players, not all the players, but a lot of the players don't see the long game. Like, say he's got two more years with the Dragons. They put him to reserve grade for the next 2 years, out of sight, out of mind. When his contract expires, you're not going to get anywhere near the money. So you're decreasing in value due to the fact that you're playing hardball and getting moved to reserve grade, which is why a lot of them are like, no, just get me out now, because they want to keep the value up. But, yeah, there's you look at Ben Hunt. Ben Hunt tried everything. He tried to play every card under the sun, homesick, all of that. He's still there. They would not let him go. So I guess they just look at it at the player and go, Ben Hunt is worth pissing off and keeping here because he is someone we need. And they look at Lomax and go, Lomax is a hell of a talent, but we can replace him, which is, I think, what they've looked at. And yeah, Jagger said, if a club and player want to part company, so be it. I have no problem with it. Flano's cutting a problem child when we have big money to chase a middle forward. Yeah. I think that's how he's looking at it, going, Zach's running his mouth and complaining all the time. We'll get rid of him. He's on a big chunk of coin. We can get money. The one I was just about to talk about, they're interested in, and they're also interested in Nelson Asofa Solomona if he gets released. But, yeah, the related news I had was that the Dragons are interested in signing Taruva from the Panthers. He's coming off contract. They can offer him more money than the Panthers can. So that's a handy replace. That's a guy that is a winger. Do you want to spend Lomax money to get him? Is another story. But, yeah. And they're also interested in Nelson, who could do two wonders in that pack for them. So, yeah, there's bigger fish out there than Lomax, as great as he is, but you know he's going to crash him. And yeah, Hammers just said, Bellamy said today that Nass is on contract and he's not going anywhere. Yeah, how many times we heard that though, Hammer? We hear that so many times, and they'll announce tomorrow that he's signed with the Roosters or something. But yeah, I don't expect the Storm to let him go. But yeah, that's just the news. Anything else you want to add on that before we move on, Richie?
No, we can move on.
We'll go to signings. I've really only got two. Isaiah Katoa has extended with the Dolphins until the end of 2028, which I think's great for both sides. I think he's really building nicely.
Yeah.
and he's a player that can lead them into the future at his age. And the Broncos have extended coach Kevin Walters until the end of 2026. So not really surprised. I kind of feel like they have Walters long-term in their minds as their coach. So why not sign him early like the Warriors did with Webby?
Yeah, 100%. He's clearly doing good things there and got a nice roster with him. So why break that up?
Oh, yeah. And Hammer said Terrell May's extended with the Roosters today. I forgot to add that. Two-year deal.
I was wondering if he was going to want to join his brother at the Panthers. He's talked about wanting to play with his brothers, but that's a big retention because he's going gangbusters right now.
Oh, he's going fantastic, and I think the only way he was going to get to play with his brothers is if his brothers if his brother left the Panthers. I didn't see him going to the Panthers.
I'm glad he's not going to the Panthers though, because could you imagine them rolling out Fisher Harris, Leota, and then bring Terrell May off the bench? I don't think anyone would ever beat them anymore. Not that anyone really is right now.
That's true. He'd be asking too much money to go to Penrith anyway. So we'll move on to injuries. There were, yet again, quite a few. A lot of them HIAs, though. So we'll see. Hopefully we see some injuries decrease a bit. But the big one for us as Warriors fans was Luke Metcalf. He fractured his tibia. He's had surgery already and is expecting to return towards the end of the season. Didn't really get the update on a specific time, but I'm kind of looking at it similar to Marty Martin's injury from last year.
Yeah.
So massive injury for poor old Lukey. Kid can't catch a break, unfortunately. And it was real innocuous tackle. It was almost directly in line. You know where we sit, Richie. It was almost directly in front of where I am. He went down and I didn't think much of it. He came straight across towards me. He didn't look in that much pain. He looked annoyed. And then they drove him out at halftime on back of the little golf cart. As soon as I saw that, I went, oh, no, it's no good. And full disclosure, that is coming from a guy who broke his ankle and drove 6 hours on it, not knowing that it was broken. So I'm not the best judge. Real disheartening for him. Disappointing. But your thoughts on it before I move on to the rest?
Obviously heartbreaking for Luke and us Warriors fans. He's just looked like he was starting to get into some pretty good areas with his play and combination with the spine. So, yeah, and the Jacob Preston one, I can't believe he came back on the field. He looked like a sickening blow and looked concussed as well as obviously having the jaw fracture. I can't believe he came back out and played.
He fractured his jaw. He's out for 6 weeks now. He did a Brad. He heard it, didn't realize he broke it, and kept going. Tough. And you said that like he looked like he was knocked too early, didn't get done for an HIA. I saw Tanya has also said Capewell wasn't named because of concussion 11-day stand down. It didn't get picked up in the game. The doctors, he didn't go off for an HIA. He played the whole time. It was just one the doctors apparently missed. Credit, I guess, to the Warriors for looking after him, because they could have easily gone, we don't need the 11-day stand down, and moved it on and let him play. But going with the rest though, Josh Adokar, he failed his HIA after his cheap shot from Latrell. He's not playing this week. Shaq Mitchell from the Rabbits, he failed his HIA. He's not coming back this week. And Zach Hoskins from the Raiders also failed an HIA. He's not playing this week. And then Alex Johnson, our predicted leading try scorer, is out for 6 or more weeks with a hamstring tear.
Not good for that prediction.
So a lot of HIAs, a lot of people getting their bells rung. So we'll move on to Naughty Boys. We've actually got a couple.
Just going to say, it's fun seeing the live chat bouncing between Facebook and YouTube, different opinions as to whether Metcalf or TMM is better, but there we go.
We can discuss that in our, we'll discuss that in our question segment if you like. But yeah, Naughty Boy Corner, we've got three. They all plead guilty, all got 2 weeks. So
good ones,
Kurt
too.
Murren. Yeah, Kurt Murren from the Bulldogs got a grade 2 dangerous throw, 2 weeks. Max Plath from the Dolphins, grade 3 dangerous contact, 2 weeks. And Lockie Galvin from the Tigers, grade 3 dangerous contact, 2 weeks. Yeah. I think they're all fair, to be honest, everything is.
Yeah, Max Plath and Lockie Galvin's hip drops were pretty bad hip drops. Kurt Morin's dangerous tackle was a bit of a shocker. Deserved the time in the bin he got. Yeah, I think they're all fair. A couple others that might from the Rabbitohs that might have maybe should have made an appearance there. Latrell and maybe Jackie Whiten had a bit of a hip drop too, but I don't think he quite landed on the legs.
Yeah, I think Jack Whiten got away with it all. Latrell got a fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, as I said, that was a fine after the fact because the refs and that didn't pick him up on it. Despite the numerous replays they showed, which added to the booing. But yeah, so that's it really. So we'll move into round four, mate. Starting with the Panthers defeating the Roosters 22-16.
Yeah, I unfortunately tipped the Roosters, so learn my lesson, never tip against the Panthers. 3-4 for the Roosters, Satili Tupanua, Brandon Smith, Daniel Tupou. For the Panthers, Sunia Taruva with a hat-trick and Dylan Edwards was the other try scorer.
Yeah, and before we move on, Nicholas said, where's the thug-like graphic? Paul only brings it up when I say something that's against people's realities when it comes to physical contact. So that will come out some point, I'm sure. Maybe not tonight, though. Panthers, they weren't as clinical without Cleary, obviously, out there steering the ship. But I thought they played well with Schneider doing a decent job at the helm. I thought he always played well for the Raiders and stuff. So I wasn't surprised to see him do what he could out there. Taruva was a weapon, and Edwards was a constant threat, as always. But those errors and penalties made things tough, which saw them have to defend their hearts out to hold on to the lead. But I think this team's just conditioned to win regardless of who's out on the field.
And as I warned, Brad, I'll just jump in with an interesting stat here that the Panthers, a different kicking game between the two teams. Roosters, only one bomb all game, 5 by the Panthers, whereas 6 grubbers by the Roosters, only 5 and 5 by the Panthers. So Roosters trying to grubber it more than bomb it. Interesting, just different tactics by these two teams.
Yeah, and your thoughts on the Panthers, Richie?
Yeah, I thought this game just once again proves the next man up mentality at the Panthers. They have a number of players out, including Nathan Cleary, probably the best in the game. And they bring on a guy like Schneider, who, like you said, Brad, did a really good job. And they find a way to outclass another top-quality opposition. So, yeah, it's very enviable, the position they're in, the way they cover these outs. It's like... it's seamless, like nothing's happened.
We're almost getting there ourselves, thank you very much.
Yeah, we're getting better. We are.
You know, we won a game with our third string fullback in the weekend. I'll have you remember.
Yeah, but we're reviewing the Roosters and Panthers.
I know, sorry. And Paul's just mentioned Taruva topped the fantasy points. Will we have him as our MVP? We'll have to see. Your thoughts on the Roosters before we move on?
I thought the Roosters have been travelling quite well so far this year, but the Panthers are the benchmark and a great gauge of where you're at. I think the Roosters will be happy they stuck at it, maybe a little disappointed in the bunker, but they can take some good lessons out of this one. I think they didn't give up and they forced a tight finish in the end. So, not all doom and gloom for the Roosters.
Yeah, I thought they were led down by the bunker, as we talked about in the news section, but I thought it was early enough in the game where the Roosters could have still taken control. They just lack polish, I think, is the most general way I can describe it. They started to get into motion in the final 10 minutes, but it was just too little too late. But despite that, I don't think it was a bad performance at all. And they showed that they're still a premiership contender. You know, it was still an understrength Panthers side, but they didn't lose. It's not like they got towed. Paul's just put up the penalty count, 9-4 to the Panthers. So they had their chances. They just didn't take them. But it's a good lesson, like you said, to learn. Your player to stand out.
I have not gone with the fantasy points. And I actually took someone in the losing team. I went to Terrell May. We were just speaking about him. I'm heading into Brad areas here, going with a prop from a losing team. But he's an absolute gun. Loving the way he plays. He does all the one percenters and runs hard, but has all the extras as well, like a good offload. I'd love for someone like him to replace Adam Blake, but it's not going to happen because he's just been retained. So, but yeah, I'm a big fan of what he's doing.
Yeah, I would have thrown all my money at him, but he was a player you just knew you'd never get to come over here. But yeah, he's fantastic. He's one of the best young front rowers around at the moment that are coming up. Very talented. I went with Tarua. I went onto the old NRLFantasy.com and just looked at whoever had the most points, I guess. No, I went with him on the sole fact that Panthers scored 4 tries. He got 3 of them. Mm. He was just, he almost looked like he was certain to score anytime he touched the ball, which is just really great when you think of the other strike weapons the Panthers have.
Even Dylan Edwards' try, he had a hand in it.
Yeah. So, he's just really going, you know, he's close to contract expiry time when performances like this start coming out. So, thought he had a great game. And I'm a bit worried now that Paul's looking at the fantasy scores in case we get a trend again. But we'll move on to the next game. On Easter Friday, the Rabbitohs defeating the Bulldogs 20-16.
And 3 tries apiece in this one for the Rabbits. Big Tommy Burgess, and 2 for Jack Wyden for the Doggies, Matt Burden, and 2 for Connor Tracy.
Yeah, so the Rabbits finally broke the losing streak. It was scratchy, unconvincing performance where they were very ill-disciplined, conceding 11 penalties, but they did reduce their errors to only 5, which helped them out a lot. I thought the inclusion of Wyden added some attacking spark, but they've got so much work to do. But the pressure, I think, some of the pressure at least, will be off them now that they've got that first win. And as a biased Warriors fan, I did not want them coming into the Warriors game this week yet to win, because we know what happens with the Warriors with that. So what's your take on the Rabbits?
That's the old Warriors, Brad.
It was last year.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, that was the
24 version.
The first game I ever managed to get Paul to go to, and we watched the Warriors play like old.
Yeah, and then anyway, let me come back again to another game.
Blaming Paul.
Yeah, you're banned for life.
Back to the Rabbitohs. They're off the mark in 2024. Way better accuracy in their play this week. I think they completed over 90% of their sets. Still lacking a bit, bit of polish from what you expect from this team, and the amount of ball they had, I would expect they might do a bit more with it than they did. But when you're 0-3 and going like they were, a win's a win.
Yeah, I think you're just scratching at whatever you can to get that result, and then worry about that stuff later. Take on the Bulldogs?
I saw lots of effort from the Dogs, and credit to them, they defended really well in the second half. At one point, with only 12 men on the field, when Moran got sent off for 10, but they defended well enough to keep them in the hunt and bring it within a try right at the death. It's kind of same old story with the Dogs. They're not there yet, even though they've done a lot of retention, recruitment, but at least you've seen effort from them. I'm sure the results will come eventually if they buy enough players.
I just thought they were too error prone and clunky, but I commend their effort, as I believe they made 12 errors, And so to make 12 errors and still lose by only four, while also losing Ed O'Carr and having a guy in the bin, it just shows, you know, the heart they have there. And eventually things will click. As you say, I still think they're a half and prop short, but maybe they're going to turn some utilities into those types of players. Who knows? But, yeah, I think very commendable. They had the Rabbitohs at their lowest. It didn't get the job done, but, yeah, it could have been worse. So, slow building, like you said. Your player to stand out, I think we picked the same guy. Paul has said that Damien Cook led fantasy points. So who'd you pick?
Jackie Wyden. He makes a big difference to their team. You can see the effort he was putting in out there and a couple of tries. So
yeah, I mean, with Jack Wyden as well, he got that double. He looked dangerous and sharp. I feel like it won't be too long till you see him in the halves, to be honest, if the Rabbits don't turn things around as much as they want. But yeah, he definitely adds a nice string to their bow in terms of attack, especially when Latrell isn't really in the form that they need him to be in. Just thought it was a great game from him. Hopefully he's not as influential this week. But we'll move on. Hopefully. Next game on Friday, Broncos defeating the Cowboys 38-12.
Yep, 6-2 here for the Broncos. Billy Walters, Jesse Arthurs, Katoni Staggs, Tyson Smoothie, Ezra Mam, and Corey Oates. For the Cowboys, Valentine Holmes, Scott Drinkwater.
A couple of stats on top of that. Offloads, only 2 by the Broncos in this one compared to 11 by the Cowboys. Dummy passes, 7 by the Broncos, by 14 by the Cowboys. Look, just run it up. And then kick defusal, 90% by the Broncos, 36% by the Cowboys. I don't think I've ever seen such a bad effort on kick defusal, but from a stats point of view. Also, I didn't watch the game.
Yeah, of course you didn't watch the game. You're still watching that boring one instead. But yeah, the Broncos, they look dangerous with Reynolds back in the mix. And despite not having Walsh out there, they attacked almost at will, with Tristan Saylor showing that he's first grade ready with a great game. Just dominated the middle of the park and won the battle. Not a complete performance, but it was still impressive, especially in the weather conditions.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was a class performance from the Broncos in the wet. They cover the loss of Reese Walsh really well with Tristan Taylor. But the inclusion of Adam Reynolds.
Saylor, mate. Saylor, not Taylor.
No, I said Saylor. I said Tristan Saylor.
Okay.
Oh. I'll watch the tapes, everybody. I may have fumbled my words. Thanks. Thanks very much, Brad. But particularly with Reynolds in the wet, his kicking game was elite and caused the Cowboys back 3 nightmares. And yeah, the momentum pretty much stayed with the Broncos throughout.
Yeah, just trying to throw you off your game there. Your thoughts on the Cowboys?
way too many errors from the Cowboys, and yeah, it was going to be interesting to see how their defense held up against the top team. So far, they haven't played the best of opposition up until this weekend, and their defense looked kind of shoddy. So I think this game showed they have some work to do in that area, apart from maybe Tom Dearden. Shout out to him, one of the great try-saving tackles. Yeah.
Yeah, that was fantastic. I thought a massive wake-up call for the Cowboys. They've been riding high so far this season, but it was their first proper challenge to date, and they crumbled. I thought too many errors. As I said, it was the worst conditions you could imagine, and they would offloading like it was dry weather. So what do you think is going to happen? But yeah, the defense wasn't in sync and they just lacked direction on attack and got bullied in the middle. They only had 2 forwards that cracked the triple digits. Any longtime people that have watched this show or read my reviews know that my pass mark for a forward is cracking triple digits. That's all I care about. I'm very one-dimensional when it comes to that. They only had 2. they have the talent to be a top side in the NRL, but they've got a lot of work to do if this is what happens when they actually play a consistent top side. Yeah, and Paul said, yeah, Cowboys being found out after being the last unbeaten team coming into this week. Yeah, they had a soft run. And, yeah, it's just, yeah, it was their first big test, and I think they failed it. But your player to stand out, I think Paul said that it was Adam Reynolds who led the fantasy points.
Yeah, well, I didn't go with Tristan Saylor. By the way, I know it's Saylor because I know who he's related to. But I went with the fantasy points. It's hard to argue with Reynolds. The problems he was giving the Cowboys back three with his bombs, it was a big catalyst for the Broncos' big lead they got out to, which the Cowboys never came back from.
Yeah, that's a fair call. I went with Pat Carrigan. I thought he was a monster in the middle, helped the Broncos get that roll on, was defending his heart out. I think he got the they did a Carl Webb like medal, because this was a game kind of in his honor as a player that was involved with both clubs. So he got it, I think, which was kind of like the player of the match. But, yeah, thought he was just a real hard-working workhorse out there. So I had to give it to him.
Yeah, and he led the Broncos for tackles made and most run meters.
Yeah, so that is Paul speak for Brad was correct with this one. We'll go to the next game. We'll just go over it quickly, though, mate. Dragons defeating Manly 20-12.
No, I want to spend a bit of time here. Yeah, 4-2. Jack Bird, Tyrell Sloan with a double, and Jaden Sawyer for Manly, Tolotoa Kola and Haumole Olokowatu.
I thought this was a slog of a game, mate. I thought both sides were playing horribly. But putting all bias to the background, I thought the Dragons just showed more heart. It's a bit cliche to say, like, they wanted it more, but that's kind of how it felt to me. They did blow a few chances, but they nailed enough in the first half to get the job done. I still have no confidence in them whatsoever to do well this year, but they showed that if their opposition has an off day against them, they're going to make them pay for it, which I guess is all you can ask for a team that's probably going to end up somewhere at the bottom. I'll put my money where my mouth is now. I don't think they're bad enough to be wooden spoon, despite my prediction now. I think I've seen enough to know that they're safe from that with some other real bad teams right now. But, I still see them in that lower region. But, yeah, commendable effort. I thought they did well. Your take on the Dragons. It's as positive as I can be.
I thought you did well, Brad. Must have been, must have been hard for you. But may not have been a pretty watch for most, but I love seeing the Mighty Red V get up. If for no other reason than I could spam Brad on Messenger. There were some strong performances in the pack for St. George, Jane Saw and the like. And their spine did well to come up with some big moments to ice the game.
Yeah, and your take on Manly?
Very error-ridden game from Manly. Normally, if Tommy Turbo's going well, Manly are going well. I thought he had a really off night. Probably one of the worst nights I've seen from him in some time. As did most of the team, to be fair. So hopefully they can get back in the groove soon, but they have a big challenge coming up this week. So, we'll see what they're really made of this week.
Yeah, Manly just looked like a shell of the side we've seen this season to date. They showed the ball no respect and their big names didn't deliver, as you said. Not much more to say. Another team that got a wake-up call this week.
Yeah. Just a few stats here. Very different kicking game. And this one, the Dragons only with two bombs and one grubber compared to the Sea Eagles with nine bombs and four grubbers. So very different kicking game between these two. As you said, error ridden. Was it 15 errors each in this game? Yeah. As well. So Stato from the stat corner. Also, kick defusal, Sea Eagles 50%. That's not good. Certainly won by the Dragons, okay. But when you've only got three kicks and you've got a 50% kick defusal, that's, oh, dear me, that's bad.
Yeah. Your player to stand out, Richie. I don't know if Paul was quick enough to see the NRL fantasy here, but
yeah, I went Tyrell Sloan actually. I think my guy linked up well with your guy, and he has been doing it for a lot of the season. I think he's even, is he leading try scorer right now, Brad? I think Tyrell Sloan's leading try scorer, but he's definitely looking a lot better than he was last year.
I will look that up because I don't know. I try to.
I'm pretty sure he is.
Humuli led fantasy points, so that's not us. No, Taruva technically is leading. There, him and Sloan are both on six, though, so you could argue.
Well, yeah, then he is leading the try scorers, isn't he?
Both of them are, yeah. But yeah, I went with Ben Hunt because I was in a state of despair after watching the Dragons win, and it's kind of like the Sharks. If that team wins, you go with Nico. If the Dragons win, I go with Hunt. But he's just really good at directing them around. He can get them into positions to score, and he had a good day at the office. And I think I went with Sloan a few weeks ago, so I didn't want to go with him again so soon.
They linked well, and I think one of Tyrell Sloan's tries, Ben Hunt put the beautiful sort of banana kick back in field and perfect area, and Sloan scooped it up. But they're going quite well.
Yeah, and Paul confirmed that Ben Hunt led the Dragons in fantasy points. So yeah, my cheat sheet is still working from time to time. So we'll move on to the next game. The Dolphins defeating the Titans 30-14.
And three tries for the Titans here. Jamin Jolliffe and two for Philip Sami. Five tries for the Finns. Jack Bostock with two. Herbie Farnworth, Hamiso Tabuai-Vaiola, and Josh Kerr.
Yeah, I thought it was a good outing. Oh, well, we've got before, stats.
I'm going to throw some stats in there. We've seen quite a lot of games where the dummy passes and offloads have actually been an indicator of who's lost. But in this one, actually 12 offloads by the Dolphins and six dummy passes compared to eight offloads and three dummy passes by the Titans. So they've bucked the trend on that one. But again, kick defusal by the Titans, 64%. 78% by the Dolphins, and your error rate's 11-8, 11 by the Titans, 8 by the Dolphins.
Yeah, so I thought it was a good outing for the Dolphins. This was a match they were expected to win, but they didn't take the Titans lightly. A big effort from the forwards helped unleash that lethal back line, and they tore the Titans to shreds in the end. Just like last year, though, the Dolphins are starting strong. We just have to wait and see if they fade again as the season drags on.
Yeah, I thought it was a gutsy win from the Dolphins after a pretty bad start. They held on, they withstood a period with 12 men and then turned the tide and pretty much dominated the rest of the game.
Yeah, your thoughts on the Titans?
Yeah, pretty bad. At least they were able to score a couple of tries this week. I think coming into this game, they'd only scored one try, one or two at most. But, at least they scored three tries this week. But just no defense to speak of, which has been a big problem for them the past few years. Obviously, the worst attack in the comp so far. I feel like Brimson's wasted in the centres. And then looking at the draw, I don't know where their next win comes from or their first win comes from. I think they're in for a pretty tough year.
Yeah, the Titans are just embarrassing. I feel for their fans right now. As this team doesn't look to be on the same page, I think there was a comment from Simon earlier saying that they did start well. You know, they got their first two tries out of the three in the first 20 minutes. But then I don't know what happened. It just disappeared. It was like they got a little bit confident and then something popped the balloon. Yeah, Fifita, I think, did look good in his return. I think he put some work in. And they're going to have to rely on him a lot this year without Big Tino, who we've spoken, I feel like, almost every week since his injury, how much of a loss that is. But I don't think Fifita is going to be enough there, and they have to be the Spoon favourite. I know there is a question for the question part later about Tigers and Spoons. I think the Tigers have already posted it to the Gold Coast. I don't know. I don't like or dislike the Titans, so it is hard to see them not performing like this, but it makes one less team fighting for the top eight against our team, I guess. I think we picked the same player here. Paul has said that Jermaine Osako led the fantasy points, so I'm confident we didn't go with that because we went with someone else.
Yeah, Hamiso Tabuai-Fadou, he's just playing insane at the moment. He got a couple of try assists. I love watching him play. He's just an excitement machine, but he's killing it this year.
And he had Dolphins for most line breaks.
Yeah, and he had that shocking game, not like, was it last week or the week before? It was in the last 2 weeks. Real bad game, so I thought this was a good bounce back, and it was kind of back to his attacking best that we're used to. And when he's humming on attack, the Dolphins are hard to beat. So thought it was great from him. So we'll move on to the next game, Easter Sunday, the Warriors defeating the Knights 20-12.
3-2 for the Warriors. Jackson Ford, Chanel Harris, Tavita, Marcelo Montoya. 2 for the Knights. Tyson Frizzell, Bradman Best.
Yeah, I thought it was another strong start here from the Warriors. I thought they controlled this match quite well. Metcalf's injury sucked the air out of that stadium, I can tell you, from someone who was sitting there. But CHT slotted in very well. It was a very fortuitous change an hour before kickoff when he replaced Lusick on the bench. Someone was looking at them nicely there for that, because I shudder to think what would have happened with that team when Metcalf went off if we had Lusick and we had Wade Egan move to the halves or something. The side isn't clicking completely yet, but I expect that to happen when Chance returns this week. And the inclusion of Egan improved the attack tenfold already. Still had me nervous in the final 10 minutes, but their defense did the job, I thought. I'm just looking forward to seeing what they can do when the best 17 are actually out on the pitch together. Your thoughts on the Warriors?
I thought this game followed a similar path as a couple of others so far this year. Really strong start, followed by a bit of a lull. I thought we defended well to only concede 2, both off kicks.
Both off grabbers,
I thought it was probably Capewell's best game so far this year with 50 tackles, and he was definitely a lot more noticeable this week. RTS obviously went crazy, but I still can't wait to see Chance back, just for the effect that he has on our sweeping plays with his timing and, out the back there. So kind of the same as you, Brad. I just can't wait to see what we do when we get everybody out there, if it happens.
Yeah. And your thoughts on the Knights?
I thought they looked dangerous at times, particularly through some of their big names, Ponga, Frizzell. Not too much else to write home about though. I thought that, without having the stats in front of me, I thought that Pack didn't stand up to our Pack very well. And as we know, that's where the games are won.
Yeah, I thought the Knights just lacked direction. They need to sort out their halves ASAP. They rely too much on individual brilliance here. And to get them out of trouble, they was basically throwing the ball to Ponga and say, please do something. And they could have pulled out a miracle in the final 10 minutes, but they just lacked the composure. A lot to work on, but it wasn't the worst performance on the planet. Kind of feels similar to what I was saying about the first two losses the Warriors had this year, where you can see the pieces there, and if they fine-tune a few things, the right people come in, they can turn things around. So, yeah, I was reasonably happy with what the Knights did. They just, I think direction is the key. Until they get a half calling the shots, I think they're going to be in trouble. Paul said Jackson Ford led the Warriors for San NBC points, and Jacko Ford, Jacko said that Jacko Ford was great in this game, and he was. But your player?
Jacko Ford. Yeah, I thought, and it's what I thought. It's not anything to do with fantasy. Yeah, he obviously got the try, but that line, those lines he's running, so effective. Just gets through a bucket load of work, and when he doesn't make a few handling errors, what an impact he has. So, yeah, I was a big fan of what he did.
Yeah, I went with the cliche answer. I went with RTS. I thought he was fantastic. There was that moment where he got the ball and he stepped a guy straight into another step, and then he ran over Adam Boyle. In a great little play there. And, yeah, it's, you know, I know your question is related to it, so I won't go into it too much, but there's all the talk about RTS and CNK and what have you. But, yeah, I thought it was a great game for him in his first game at fullback, as a starting fullback since his return, and thought he did a great job and was very happy.
Yeah, that run was crazy, wasn't it?
Yeah,
you've seen him do it so many times, but people just can't stop that left foot step. He embarrasses people. It's a bump off a middle forward.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
So, yeah, we'll move on to the next game. I don't know if we want to talk about this one with Simon watching, but the Sharks defeating the Raiders 36-22.
And 6-4 here for the Sharks. Braden Trindle, Ronaldo Mulitalo with 2, Blake Braley, Kale Aro, and Sione Katoa. For the Raiders, James Schiller with 2, Xavier Savage, and Danny Levy.
Yeah, the Sharks looked a bit shell-shocked with the Raiders' fast start, but they stay composed and then just put on an attacking clinic with 5 tries in a row to wrestle this game out of the Raiders' hands. The Sharks needed to put a performance on to show that they're not just flukes, and I think this game delivered that for them.
Yeah, I thought the Sharks were dead and buried after 25 minutes.
But
great effort from the boys from the Shire to not fold. And I think from the moment Danny Levy scored in the 23rd minute for the Raiders, the Sharks pretty much owned the game from there on out.
Yeah, I think Danny knew that I was in a bit of a pickle in my fantasy team because he was the only hooker I had, so he played well for me. I think Paul might be able to pull it up, but I think he led the Raiders in fantasy points. So that was good for me. But, yeah, your thoughts on the Raiders?
Jamal Fogarty led the Raiders for fantasy points.
I have Fogarty in my team as well, so that's fine.
The Raiders, Ricky was rightfully very disappointed with his troops, which he made clear in the press conference. The way they led a big lead like that, not only slip away, but in the end, they wound up comprehensively beaten. So, back to the drawing board for the Green Machine this week, I think.
Yeah, I've got on here the Raiders look like world beaters for the first 30 and then just disappeared. I don't know what caused the switch. I know Simon said it was the kind of Canberra Raiders fading moments that we're kind of used to from the past. But they just dropped the ball in both senses of that term. And they lost all defensive structure. Tough watch for Raiders fans, as this was a much needed 2 points that they just gave away. I expect a big bounce back this week. And your player to stand out, Matt?
I went with Ronaldo. Ronaldo, a couple of tries. I've always been a fan of their back three and how they combine and the work they get through. But yeah, Ronaldo, I enjoy watching him play.
And Paul said that Nicholas Hines led in fantasy points, which is why I picked him. Kind of what I said with the Dragons game. If the Sharks play well, you usually go and pick Hines. But I thought he actually I've kind of been a bit harsh on him this year, kind of calling him a pretender. All the pressure was put on him and he's not really delivering. I thought he showed a bit more of what we saw when they were the flat track bullies last year. He was kind of directing play around. He was good at the tee. I think he was 100%. When he's on, he's very hard player to contain. And if you've got a guy like that that can unleash that back three that you're a fan of, it makes it a hard night at the office. So I had to go with Hine. Which takes us to the last game, Easter Monday. The West Tigers going and getting the job done against the Eels, 17-16.
Good game, this. Two tries for the Eels, Mike Acevo and Clint Gutherson. Three tries for the Tigers, two for Justin Ollam, one for Jareem Buller.
Yeah, a bit of a surprise here with this one. Kick defusal, 67% for the Eels, only 50% for the Tigers. So they couldn't deal with the kicking game very well, but still came through. But errors for the Eels, 13 versus 10 for the Tigers. But penalties again, an issue. But two for the Eels, but 10 for the Tigers. So some real stats against the Tigers in this one, even though they got the win.
The rest were against them, Paul. That's all I can say. The Tigers, they just looked a different team right now. You can see the confidence and self-belief they have, and it shows in their performance. They have flair in attack, and they're no longer liabilities in defense. Still a lot of work to do, obviously, but compared to the Tigers of yesteryear, you know, they're so much better. The resurgence of just Ollam and Staines in the backs has added a new dimension to this side, and Lachlan Galvin has shown he's a hell of a talent despite his young age. Benji may only be a part-time coach, but he's got this side onto the same page, and they look to be on their way to avoiding the spoon.
Yeah, I'm so happy to see the Tigers now back-to-back wins. They have way
you
more
picked
quality
it, mate.
In their back. I did. I think they have way more quality in their back five now since Ollam has come in. The halves look good. Caesar, kind of the steady hand. Galvin, the young gun, playing with confidence. Great signs for them. I just really hope they can keep it going and maybe pick up ninth spot. I don't want them taking a Warriors spot in the eight.
Yeah, and your thoughts on the Eels?
I thought they looked okay in patches. I thought Gutho really put up his hand to lead the team around with Moses out, but Moses is a big out, though, and you can see when he isn't there how far his game has come along and how much he means to this Eels team. Probably not so much of a flat track bully anymore. I think he means a lot to the Eels.
Yeah, Eels, I've put down here, they may be yet another team that took the Tigers lightly. They looked to be rushing with the ball in hand and just didn't ask questions of the Tigers' defense. Had a chance to take this game over when Galvin was sent to the bin, but choked. Also had a chance to win it on the final whistle, but Gutho shanked the kick, thankfully. I had picked the Eels, so it would have helped me in tipping if they got that kick, but I didn't want to see the Tigers lose in that fashion because I thought the penalty was a bit harsh. Not the best day out for Para, and a lot falls on their shoulders, but yeah, as you said, Mitchell Moses is a big out, but you know, there's a few teams that have had big outs that you know, at least fronted. This should have been a game you could win without Mitch Moses, to be fair, but that might be me still taking the Tigers lightly as well.
Yeah,
perhaps. And I think Paul has said that Jermaine Hopgood led the fantasy points for the game, and Stefano led for the Tigers. So I know we didn't pick fantasy score here. So who did we pick? We picked the same guy.
We did. I could have gone with Stefano Tuikumanu. He was really good, but Lockie Galvin, hard to ignore. Yeah, he set up one of Ollam's tries. He set up Jareem Buller's try. He just looks so confident. Isn't he just 18 years old? I think he's still 18, but he looks like he plays a lot with a lot older head on him.
He's 18. He's 19 in July. He's 18 He's 19 years old in July.
Footy-wise, he looks a lot more mature than that. It's just such a shame he's going to be rubbed out for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, so I went with Galvin as well. I thought, despite the sin bin, I think he still had played a big part in this game. Yeah, as you said, 18-year-old running around like he's been there forever. There was a good comment. Luke Brooks came out about him this week, saying, like, Tigers fans, you know, back up and let this kid breathe. We don't want another Luke Brooks situation at the Tigers with Galvin. Don't cruise him out. So, which I get, you know, there's going to be ups and downs. A kid as young as him, I think one thing that he has at the moment is he's got Benji there as his coach. Benji knows what it's like to be the young, exciting half, and will be able to help him out. I think the Tigers might struggle the next 2 weeks without him, which is probably a testament to how good he is already. But yeah, thought it was a great game from him. And Cal, we'll answer this one now. Callum said, did you guys think there was a hint of a penalty to go to the Tigers before the final Parramatta penalty shot? I don't think so, but I think the last penalty was a bit rough that the Eels got. But
yeah,
thankfully, I think the right team won in the end, thankfully. So yeah, that was round four. So I don't know what Paul wants to bring up first, if he wants to bring the tips or if he wants to bring the ladder. It's the tips. I see I didn't update the title. That's my bad. It's actually round four, not round three. Unprofessional. Easter threw me off, guys. My plans went out the window.
Just can't get the stuff.
Yeah, that's last week's picture.
No, it's not last week's picture. It's last week's heading. No, because you got picture. Round four. Oh, no, that is last week's picture, Paul.
Yeah. I'm higher up the ladder now. That's how I know.
I will let's go with the table then, and I will I'll try and find this week's picture.
I was going to say I'm looking at it, and I've got round four in my picture, so I did do my job properly. So we'll go to letter.
None of the staff anywhere any good here. It's not just him. It's also me.
I did my job right. Thank you. So I said top eight last week. So you want to say top eight this week?
That's last week's letter too, isn't it?
It is too. Oh, Paul, what are you doing?
I'm in a shocker. Absolute shocker.
I sent you the right pictures.
I've got a picture of the right ladder, so I can read the top eight if you like.
Yeah, we'll say what it is. So you give the top eight, mate.
Top eight. Dolphins, fins up, number one. Panthers have moved to number two. North Queensland Cowboys number three, Cronulla Sharks sitting in fourth, Melbourne Storm in fifth, the Tigers sitting in sixth, how good. The Roosters number seven, and Canberra Raiders holding on to eighth.
Yeah, and then for the rest, we've got the Parramatta Eels sitting at ninth, the Warriors sitting at 10th, Manly are 11th, 12th of the Broncos, 13th of the Dragons, 14th of the Cowboys. Not Cowboys, the Bulldogs. Paul threw me off with his unprofessional acts here. 15th, we've got the Knights. 16th, we've got the Rabbits. And then last place, we've got the only team yet to win, the Titans, who do still have 2 points at least due to the bye. And thanks, Paul. That is the fixtures for round five. So that's always great to see. Yeah, so we've just done that. That's a beautiful ladder. Do you have the tips? Yeah, there we go. Woo! So there wasn't much changing in regards.
No eggs, lots of beers, clearly.
There was no change really to the top, but some movements are in the middle. So ACT Hellcat, he only got two this round. But he is still at the top of the table with 28 points all up. Shuddy FC is 1 point behind the second. Rocking Horse Road is 22 points after getting five. I'm fourth after my 4 points, getting 20. Richie did the sly move and used one of his jokers. So he got 10 points and climbed up to fifth place. And Simon's just below you. He got four, same as me, on 19. And then those guys, Bjorn, Jono, and the Punisher, I think, aren't picking. Or maybe they are. Oh, no. I don't know. How many teams went away? It might be right, because Hammer only got two. But I think a few people didn't go. And, yeah, Simon said it looks like he's still in the same spot from last week. So we, yeah, there's a few of us kind of still around the same, but Richie's coming up. He was going around. But yeah.
Caleb, come on.
So we'll go. That's why we have Paul's one and not mine. But yeah, so interesting. It's still nice and tight. I'm going to spoil it. I've used a Joker this week. I'm coming for the top. I'm coming. I've decided this week was the week to go.
Okay, so this week my TAB multi has a chance then. Other than like.
No, that's only if Richie agrees with me.
No, but I need one where you both agree, right? So if you've got them, you're certain. Then when Richie agrees, we're great. Because last week we were 50%, guys. Only you got half of them right where you both went together. So it was a bit nasty. That one happened, stung on the old multi there, I must say.
So we'll go into questions. I see you've got a few saved up for us, Paul.
So we had a bit of a kerfuffle in the chat between about TMM and Metcalf. And Mike said TMM is arguably better than Metcalf. Other people said that he hasn't got a clue. And someone else says that, and Jacko was like, said, I'm surprised TMM got the nod over CHT, as his cut form hasn't been great. So what's your thoughts about TMM and how he's going? Is he better than Metcalf? Or what do you think the ranking is at the Warriors in that position?
So I don't think he's better. I think they're different. They're different styles. Yep. I like some of what TMM brings in. I think he's been playing all right in Cup. But the reason he is in, Andrew Webster actually said the reason. There's no cloak and daggers with Webster. He's straight as an arrow. He said TMM is in because he doesn't want to lose the utility ability of Chanel. So he's basically said Chanel can play anywhere, so why put him in there where we have TMM? If something goes wrong again, we bring CHT in, which I think is kind of an early indicator that come game day, Lusick's going to be off and CHT will be on the bench again. But that was kind of, I think, a discussion point we were having during the week, wasn't it, Richie? We're saying, like, what do you do? I was all for letting Chanel start. Going, he played well last week. And I think it might have been you or Ruan Hammer said having him on the bench, though, is such a useful cog to have, especially when all these teams are dropping players left, right, and centre. And, yeah, so I can see both sides. But, yeah, I think you can't – it's comparing apples and oranges. They're two completely different style players.
But you can have him on the pitch and just move him to where you need him to be as a utility player. He doesn't have to be off the bench, he's a utility player. And then you can have that guy who comes off the bench, you go, okay, if you come off the bench, you're going to go into where Chanel's playing, and Chanel will move to the gap. So you don't have to play him on the bench to bring him into that gap. You can have him on the pitch to move into that gap.
Yeah, but it's better to have your halves kind of set for the 80 minutes. But
I think the way they intend on using Chanel, if we're injury free, is to bring him on and give Egan a spell. So they probably want to keep him fresh for that particular role, I think. But you're right, Paul. I mean, you, as a utility, you could just shift him from a starting position elsewhere, but they probably want to give our hooker a spell with a fresh guy to take advantage of the tiring defense.
Yeah, so, and so Jacko said, so CHT will be on the bench. That's just me speculating from what Webster said. Because that only makes sense if he's playing, if he's on the bench. Because if you're saying you're saving him because of his utility option and then he's not on the bench, you're not saving him for his utility. You're just not picking him. So it makes sense to me. That's the, yeah. If you're not going to use him for his utility, you play him starting, if that is your reasoning. So, yeah, that's what I'm expecting. Could be completely wrong. That's just me taking what Webster has said in the media and putting a logic spin on it.
As you say, look, he says it as it is in the media.
Yeah, He doesn't usually play cloaks and daggers, Webster.
So sticking with the Warriors. Wonder if the Warriors are eyeing up Ben Nelson to replace AFB.
I think we've covered that before. I think if he was willing to come, I think it'd be a great addition. But I think I said it when the news came out. I don't know him personally, but I know behind the scenes he has an extreme hatred for the Warriors. It's the Warriors to him are what the Dragons are to me. So I don't see him wanting to come to that team. I wouldn't want to go to the Dragons. I've never played an NRL game in my life. They could offer me all the money in the world. I would not do it. Because I don't like the Dragons. So I don't see him doing that. And it's not like the Warriors are the only option. If the Storm did let him go, which we've already seen from Hammer saying that ain't going to happen. But if he did get let go, we're not the only ones that would be interested. So I think if the Warriors were the only ones that could pay him money and get him here, that might change the perspective. But this is a guy that, you know, that long ago said he was looking at playing for the Wallabies. You know, he does have options on the table if he didn't want to be at the Storm anymore or if they didn't want him. I would love to see him there. I think that Webster could do wonders. I just don't see him wanting or being interested in coming here.
This is in reference to the Tigers sit currently sixth in the table. They've got two wins. They've also had a bye already, so a very early bye for them. So they sit there on 6 points on a sixth in the table. Callum says, have the West Tigers shown you boys enough to suggest that they will avoid the wooden spoon?
Yes.
Yeah, for me, yeah. It's a combination of them showing me something and what the Titans have shown me as well. I think the Titans have locked that wooden spoon. It's early days. They might prove us wrong, but the way they're looking, they're looking horrible, Paul.
They've lost all three, I admit. Minus 72 points across those three games. But the Rabbitohs, they've played, they're minus 60 points. They've played one more game.
They've played better teams, though, in their defense.
It's also who the Titans have played. The Titans have played teams you wouldn't be tipping for the eight.
My reasoning is kind of the same. I could sit here and say it wouldn't surprise me if the Tigers don't win another game this year. But I don't see the Titans getting two wins this year right now. So I think the Tigers have done enough already to avoid it. I just think the Titans are that bad. It's not necessarily the Tigers are that good. But, yeah, I still see a few more wins up the sleeves of the Tigers. So if they get another 1, 2, 3 wins, I think they've already put it to bed.
To back you up with some stats here, boys. The team with the second least points scored so far this season are the Storm with 50. Okay, that's second least. The least is the Titans with 18. After three games, that's 6 points a game you're scoring. Yep. And at the end of the day, you have to score points to win.
Both those teams have had a bye as well, I think.
But then again, the Tigers had a bye as well, and they've scored 61 points. But I mean, 18 points, no one else, if you average 6 points per game, is anywhere near the Titans. The Titans really do need to start scoring points, learning how to score points. That is a big problem for them. Sure, they're shipping points as well, but you're never going to win if you can't score.
And like Simon said, that the Tigers should finish in ninth place, which is their natural place. Jacko said they'll finish around 12th to 14th, which is kind of where I've got them to. I kind of have them in the 12th, 14th is where I kind of have your Dragons, your Tigers, and what have you. And yeah, Simon said he's got a soft spot for the Titans and thinks they're gutless and cowardly, where their unwillingness to win will be competitive. Yeah, they look like the Dragons did for a period last year where they looked like they were disinterested. That was around the time Ben Hunt didn't want to be there anymore. And they all played like it. That's kind of what the Titans look like right now. I don't know how you fix that. Dez has got his hands full. But any other questions from anyone else, Paul?
No, that's it from the live chat.
All right. I'll go with my one first, Richie. Yep. So we kind of touched about it in the news, but this round we saw bunker decisions that were deemed incorrect by the NRL again. What would you do to see this change, as the bunker has all the tools available to ensure that they should never make mistakes? Mistakes do happen, but it should be very seldom.
Probably employ people that maybe they need to do eye testing, something like that. I don't know, Brad. I don't know. Like you say, they've got all the tools. There are certain rules that they're called on to rule on quite frequently, particularly the obstructions. Like you say, there's a lot of grey areas. They try and make it black and white. You make it black and white, and then everybody's up in arms. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's whether or not their role is defined, and you know, I think a lot of it too is what they're dictated by the NRL. The NRL kind of hang them out to dry a little bit in some cases, telling them this is how you have to rule on things, and then when everybody is complaining about certain calls, then the NRL comes out on Monday and says, well, actually, you should have done it this way. So, yeah, I don't know. It's just, the picture's very murky. It's not, I don't know. I don't know how to answer your question because, yeah, it's just, sometimes it seems like it's a mess.
I gave you that question because I don't have an answer either. So that's going to be the most disappointing question we've had in the segment, with us not knowing. And Paul said he likes black and white decisions as at least a consistency. The only issue is the consistency this time with this, Paul, is that they're always getting it wrong.
Sure, but
which is unfortunate.
I don't like people like, oh, the referees have a feel for the game. No, just have rules and laws or rule, whatever you want to call them, and officiate them. Don't, this whole feel for the game business leads to inconsistency and then people not knowing what the hell's going on. So just have it clear and make decisions like that. That, to me, that's how I want it. This whole feel for the game stuff doesn't. Yeah, I don't agree with that.
Nothing screams rugby union more than that statement you just made, Paul. We can see what sport we're in now.
Jeez. No, it's a very unpopular opinion in rugby union as well. But to me, that's I want it clear cut so I can look at an incident and tell you what the decision is going to be. That's what somebody else will do. If someone like me cannot, which I can't in the rugby union sometimes, tell you what the decision is, then you've got it wrong. Someone who watches this much rugby, or as you guys, that much league, if you can't see something happening going, that's a decision straight away, then that's wrong. How is a casual fan supposed to know what the hell's going on if you guys can't say straight away what the result is?
Some of it comes down to the coaching of teams too. Like, they make a rule black and white, and then coaches tell their players to, all right, go do this to milk a decision in our favour.
Yeah. I don't know. So we'll go on to your question.
Fine, then. But that's not the problem of the coaches or the players. That's the problem of the rule makers, right? They know they're going to push the boundaries. That's these guys are paid to push the boundaries. If they lose their jobs. They're paid to get results. We've seen that because we've seen teams cheat.
Yeah, it's fair.
And so they're going to cheat this way as well.
Yeah, so we'll move on to your question. It's the question I hate actually the most that I've heard this year, so it's going to be interesting. I'm sick of it.
Me too, but everyone's asking it, so I might as well ask you.
Yeah, I'm crossing my arms now. I'm ready for it.
The hottest topic when it comes to the Warriors right now is Chance Nickel-Klokstad versus Roger Tuivasa-Sheck. Who plays fullback? What side of the fence are you on, and why?
I actually talked about this in my review, so it's clear that you don't read it, so thanks for that. But
hey, I do. I just so want you know to what tell team people. I am.
I'm team centre. RTS is a centre. That's what he was signed as. Everyone's writing off CNK going like, Roger is a fantastic fullback. There's no one disputing that. That's not why they signed him. You look, Chance was – his last game was that game against Australia. He got near on 300 metres, defended. Everyone's throwing him out before he's even got to lace up the boots this year. We saw what he did. We saw what he did for the Warriors last year. He is the missing link right now. We keep saying that the Warriors look clunky on attack. The way their attack is structured, he's an integral part of it. What Roger can do isn't what we need at that fullback position. We need him, though. But Chance is that link player. It's why Dallin was scoring a million tries a game because of his injection. That's not how Roger does his thing. But it also means that Chance is going to be able to do things with Roger on that left edge to get Roger into scoring opportunities more. So I think you have to keep CNK at fullback because it's better for everybody, which is actually Cameron Smith made a point because the Australians are loving talking about how CNK shouldn't be a fullback anymore. And he was asked the question. Much of it, he was a prick on the field and a referee. He knows this game inside and out. And he said, on paper, you know, of course you'd like Roger to be a fullback, but you want your best players on the field and for the team to work as a cohesive unit and be the most dangerous, you want Chance at fullback. So if it's good enough for Cameron Smith and Andrew Webster, it's good enough for me. And yeah, Jacko said CNK is first choice fullback. The guy's an elite player. RTS was signed as a center. End of story. Yeah, I don't know why they're bringing it up because that's the first thing when he was announced. Okay? He has come in as a center. I feel like you're going to get to a point where, you know, Webster's very affable and he likes to talk to the media. I feel like if they keep ramming this question down his throat, we're going to see less and less of Webster in the media. Because how many times can you answer the same question with the same answer and keep getting asked it? It's, yeah, I'm going on a rant here. But, yeah, that's what I'm like. And, you know, maybe it is something you can discuss later on if Chance comes back and things aren't working. But he hasn't been given the chance to show that he still deserves that jersey yet.
Pun intended.
So, yeah. You know, I try to get one every game. But yeah, that's mine. But what about you?
I don't have a lot to add. What you said, what Jacko said in the comments, that I pretty much share the exact same view. CNK's better for the team. Our attack flows really well when he's there. And Roger makes a damn good center as well. So I just hope Chance comes back and kills it and puts the conversation to bed.
Yeah. And Paul, your opinion.
Anything that keeps Adam Pompey off the pitch, you're for.
100%.
Great call, Paul.
Yeah, that's not actually included in the bias of that opinion, actually. That's got nothing to do with it. I thought Pompey did fine in the weekend too.
He did well.
Hang on, you just admitted he's the only player you've booed. You booed him the weekend.
In fairness,
had a good game.
In fairness, when I booed him, the game hadn't kicked off yet because, you know, before the game they announce who's playing. So they say, like, at fullback, Roger Tuivasa-Sheck, and you clap. When they got to centre, Adam Pompey, I booed.
The guy hasn't even pulled on the kit yet this season, and the moment he gets his name mentioned, you boo him.
Mate, I wasn't the only one that booed him at that time either, I'll have you know. There are other people around that did it, so I don't know. I don't know what to say. We'll move on. You're going to get me cancelled on here because of anti. And Jagger said, X props do strange things. Yeah, I'm not meant to like back.
Yeah, it's all those
most likely. So we'll move on. We'll do the Warriors Rabbits game, our lineup. So I'll let you run down the Warriors team.
Fullback, Chance Nicol-Kluster. The wings, Dallin Martinez-Lesniak, Marcelo Montoya. The centres, Rocco Berry, Roger Tuivasa-Sheck. The halves, Timari Martin's been named, Sean Johnson. The forward pack, Adam Fanua-Blake, Wade Egan, Mitch Barnett, Jackson Ford, Marata Niokore, Tohu Harris. Interchange bench at this stage, Freddie Lussick, Tom Ale, Bunty R4, Jazz Tevanga. Not sure what late change will be made, but that's what was named yesterday.
Yeah. I'm not too upset with that team. That's kind of, I in my review said I'd have CHT at six. Everything else is as advertised except for Morata, because I didn't know that Capewell was injured. So I had Capewell there. But with what they've got, I'm happy with that. What do you think? You happy with that 17?
Oh, yeah, happy with that. If Capewell's not playing, Niokore did a hell of a job in as an edge back role last year, and we know the lines he runs off Johnson. It's just different, but it's still good. Otherwise, with the cattle we have available, I'm okay with that. That's good.
Yeah, and then the Rabbits, we've got at fullback Latrell Mitchell.
Hang on, let's build it, guys. You're expecting Chanel to come into the 17, right, on the interchange bench?
Yeah.
Probably.
I expect Chanel to come in at 14, just judging by the comments.
So you don't actually like the 17. You're happy with the 17 with that one shot if Chanel comes in at 14.
I'm happy if Lussick's there too. I'm just going with what Webby said. I think if there are any other changes, who they've named, I was going to say you might potentially see Jacob Laban come in, but I don't think so. Jacko said Nagore may struggle to play 80 minutes. Yeah, I'm expecting potentially we might see,
Barnett to second row?
Yeah, I was going to say Barnett might move out. Row. Yeah, or they might decide to put a Jazz out there, but Jazz isn't really known for that. So it could be Barnett goes out to the edge and Jazz comes into the middle. Who knows? Sometimes it's a lottery, this interchange. I think it's the one thing Webster hasn't really done well since he's been a Warriors coach. That might be a controversial take, but I think his interchange is always a bit weird. But that's just me.
Now, Brad, is he in the next team? I must warn you, no booing the first player. Okay, you're not allowed to boo him as you start the naming of the of the team.
I only boo my own players. I don't boo the opposition. I actually clap the opposition onto the field, but I feel like I deserve the right to boo my own players. So I don't boo Latrell. I don't like him, but fullback Latrell Mitchell. If he shows up or not, it depends how his stress is before the game. Wingers, Isaac Thompson and Tane Milne. The centres, Jack Whiten and Isaiah Tass. Halves are Cody Walker and Dean Hawkins. Front row, Tevita Totola, Damian Cook and Thomas Burgess. Second row, we've got Keon Kolomatangi and Jacob Host. And then lock is Cameron Murray. Interchange, we've got Michael Cheekam, Talis Duncan, Sean Kepi and David Moali. I've actually gone Warriors here. We don't have the greatest track record against the Rabbits. And they always seem to know how to beat us, but I'm confident that with Chan's back, we're going to get the job done. So I've gone Warriors.
Yeah, I'm going Warriors as well. Like you say, I'm always nervous against the Bunnies. We haven't gone well recently against them, but got to beat them sometime. I think this is our best chance.
Best chance to strike. Yeah. So that is the Warriors game. If we go to the rest of the round, hopefully that's the ladder pool. You know, honestly, I just, what do we pay for, mate? So the rest of the round, we've got Thursday night, we've got Storm Broncos. I've gone with the Storm. I think at home they're going to get the edge here. So I'm what about you?
I went Broncos. Margin of 10 points.
Nice. So there we go. That's zero for the multi so far. Next game, we've got Bulldogs Roosters. I've gone with Roosters.
Roosters.
Yep. Next game on Friday, we've got Knights Dragons. I've gone Knights.
Knights, home ground. Yep.
Simon said, I'm guessing nothing and you'll probably get nothing. He's keeping them close to his chest. Next game, we've got Rabbits Warriors, which we've both picked the Warriors. Game after that, Seagulls Panthers. I've gone with Panthers.
Panthers, not tipping against them again.
Yep. Dolphins Tigers next up. I've gone with Dolphins. Tigers, I was tempted, but with Galvin out, I think we've got to go Dolphins at home.
Yeah, Dolphins. But I think that'll be a good game. I'm keen to watch that one.
Then we've got the Cowboys Titans. I've gone with Cowboys.
I went with Cowboys as well as 99% of everyone else on footy tips. It's 99-1.
Yeah, there's that one Titans fan still holding out hope. And then the last game, we got Raiders and Eels. I've gone with the Eels. This one was tight. I'm not convinced on either team, but I've gone with the Eels because I think they'll want a bit of a bounce back after losing to the Tigers.
Canberra will want to bounce back too. I'll go on Canberra. Yeah. Home ground, Para, no Mitch Moses, so on and so forth. Canberra for me.
So what, we've agreed on like three games?
Yeah. No. Easy multi.
No, you've agreed on six.
Okay.
So yeah, we've agreed on the Cowboys over the Titans, the Dolphins over the Tigers, the Panthers over the Eagles, Knights over the Dragons, Roosters over the Bulldogs, and the Warriors over the Rabbitohs.
All right.
On that one about you saying close, the Dolphins are actually bigger favourites than either the Panthers or the Warriors this weekend, which is perhaps a bit surprising after the Tigers have won 2 out of 3on that one. As you might imagine, the Cowboys at $1.15 are the shortest favourites of the weekend because they're playing the Titans, who are at $5.20. No one else is even over $3 this weekend, so it shows you how poor the TAB ranks the Titans currently.
Yeah, so that is our picks for the round, which means NRL is over for Jacko. So Jacko can go, but before we let everyone else go, we'll just do a quick rundown of Super League, mate. So after their wins this round, St. Helens and Catalans are now first and second on 10 points. Warrington and Wigan have dropped to third and fourth with 8 points. And Castleford and London are still waiting for that first win, both with 0-6 record. So I'll quickly go through the round six results. We had Leeds defeat Castleford 26-6. Hull KR defeated Hull FC 34-10. St. Helens defeated Wigan 12-4. Catalans defeated Warrington 32-24. Salford defeated Lee 32-22. And then Uddersfield defeated London 26-6. And then round seven, we've got Lee versus Wigan, Castleford versus Salford, Leeds versus Warrington, Hull KR versus London, Hull FC versus Uddersfield, and Catalans versus St. Helens. So out of all of that, I feel like there's only really one good game to watch, and that's the last one. I think Catalans St. Helens will be a barn burner. But that is it for the Super League. Not much there. It's a bit harder. It's getting harder and harder to watch their content. Anything else you want to add before we let everyone go? I know we're going super long tonight because Paul didn't know what pitches to bring up, which wasted like 20 minutes. So that's on Paul this week. But yeah, anything else you want to add?
And a little bit of our rambling, but
as the 20-minute tirade about chance.
Yeah, exactly. No, thanks everybody for the chat. A lot of fun. I'm about to go rewind this back and see if I did say Tristan Taylor, because Brad's got me.
You did say Tristan Taylor. I'm honest. You did.
Well, I'll report back next week. I'm sure it was Taylor. Anyways, up the wires, everybody. Enjoy the weekend.
Yeah, but the fact that he's going to try and rewind it on his VHS machine shows you how old Richie is.
Yeah, it's on YouTube, man. Just click back a bit. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in tonight and joining us on Standoff with Brad and Richie. For your weekly update on Rugby League, tune into our show next week at 8 p.m. here on Facebook or YouTube, or at your convenience on iHeartRadio or Spotify. Just remember to search for New Zealand Sport Radio. Cheers for joining me again, Richie, and thanks, Paul, for all your help. Admittedly, some of it was a bit iffy tonight, but it's helped nonetheless. And good night, everybody.